Blog Talk Radio.
WPR Rebuttal is on the air. Welcome to WPR Rebuttal, bringing you sides of the story missed by Wisconsin Public Radio, shedding light and perspectives that the Board of Regents-owned WPR won't allow. I am your host, Senator JPO, and tonight I have a wonderful scoop that very few news outlets have been able to get, and that is the official copy of the letter dated January 19th, 2018, sent by the St. Croix County District Attorney's Office declaring Ashland County Sheriff's Department Deputy Brock Mirjanovich free from wrongdoing in the November 8th, 2017 incident in which Jason Perro died. And I'm going to read that letter tonight. And before we get going, I just want to say that our call number here, which my computer is going very slow, but we do have a call number. If you wish to comment live on WPR Rebuttal, dial 929-477-3965. So if you're just wandering in right now as we're live, all you need to do is get to your phone, dial 929-477-3965, and I'll see your call on our dashboard, and I will get to you as soon as I can. But first, a live reading of the letter from the St. Croix DA's office, finding Ashland Deputy Brock Mirjanovich free of any wrongdoing in the shooting death of Jason Perro. And I'm bringing it up on the screen. Wow, this computer is really, really going slow. But hey, that's the beauty of doing an amateur podcast like this is that even though I scooped WPR Rebuttal, my equipment is crap. Okay, so I know you're all waiting for me to read a letter. Here it is. January 19th, 2018. And you have a bunch of different people in the to which it's addressed. You have Joe Welsh, a special agent from the Wisconsin Department of Justice. You have the Ashland County District Attorney, Kelly McKnight. You have Ashland County Sheriff's Office, Sheriff Mick Brennan. And then, of course, you have Ashland County Sheriff's Office Deputy, Brock Mirjanovich, as the recipients of this letter. Those four individuals. And this is regarding the DCI, Department of Correctional Investigations, case file 17-7866, regarding the death of JIP, Jason, letter I, Perro, day of birth, September 13th, 2003. So Jason died about 6 weeks after his birthday. But okay, so here is what Michael E. Nieskes said, and his last name is spelled N-I-E-S-K-E-S, and it's a German pronunciation, so it's Nieskes. And he's a district attorney for St. Croix County's office, and the reason why St. Croix County attorney investigated the Ashland County incident is that there's less of a conflict of interest. Now, here's what he wrote. I was asked to review the shooting that occurred in Odana, Ashland County, of a juvenile, Jason I. Perro, day of birth, September 13, 2003, by an Ashland County deputy, Brock Mirjanovich. I've completed my review and determined the deputy's actions through use of deadly force in his situation were justified by the circumstances he found himself in, and that there is no criminal liability for the death of the juvenile Jason I. Perro. In doing this, I have reviewed the investigation of DCI, the interviews that they had conducted, the autopsy results, and the rest of the investigative information found. I find that the juvenile contacted the department from his home phone and stated that there was an individual armed with a knife walking on the street in front of his home. He, meaning Jason I. Perro, gave the description of an individual that matches his description. Well, grammatically incorrect, it should have said an individual that had matched his description. But whatever. I mean, he's writing an official letter, but doesn't mean it's going to be grammatically correct all the time. Okay, so shortly thereafter, the deputy, Brock Mirjanovich, appeared at the location, which was on that road. It's on Maple Street, actually, in Odanah. And an individual is there armed with a knife, as described by the caller. In other words, okay, just to stop the letter right here and point out to the audience. Essentially, what happened is Jason Pero called the police report on himself, but he was describing the person outdoors with the knife as if it were someone else, but he gave the same description of what he was wearing. So in other words, he was like play acting two different people. Jason Pero was the caller, but he was also he was pretending to be like a third party witness to the person. So it's kind of like multiple personality disorder, but not quite, because he was fully aware of what he was doing. So it's not quite multiphasic disorder, but essentially when he's making the 911 call, then Jason said that there was someone else outside. So at the time, he is pretending that there is another person, but he described that person in a way such that the cops arriving on a scene would instantly know, oh, well, that's the Jason Pero guy. And it's just one of those things where apparently not until after was he shot was he actually identified as Jason Pero. But it was one of those things where he had to go and call to make it seem as if there were a third-party intruder to put the police on high alert and make them more likely to shoot him. So Jason Pero did his research when he called in the suicide by cop. Okay, so getting back to the letter here. Michael Nyskies continues writing. The deputy told Jason Pero to drop the weapon. The individual, Jason, came at him, and the deputy, Mrjenovic, responded by firing two shots. Both shots hit the individual, identified later as the juvenile JAP, in the chest, and those two shots were a cause of his death. There is no video of the occurrence, and there is no independent witness to the incident. Now, the autopsy by the Dane County Medical Examiner showed the death of Jason I. Pero was from the two gunshot wounds from Deputy Mrjenovic. Further, the autopsy showed that the juvenile had in the system fentanyl, a prescription medication for which Jason Pero had no known prescription, nor was that fentanyl used by medical personnel after the incident. The juvenile further had a number of cuts on his forearms that appeared to be self-inflicted and of recent occurrence. And a knife recovered from the scene near Jason Pero is consistent with knives found in his household. Therefore, based upon my review of the evidence and the standards and training for law enforcement in the state of Wisconsin, I find that the deputy, Mrjenovic, used a deadly force to be appropriate, and there will be no charges arising for this incident. Sincerely, Michael E. Nyskies, St. Croix County District Attorney. Well, there you have it. I also put in a link to the slider. Because my web host, I had been using 000 web host for a while, but they shut down my account. So, in lieu of finding a new web host right away, I had decided to try to upload my file to my Blogspot account. Now, unfortunately, Blogspot does not accept PDF or Word doc uploads. So what I had to do is I made screen captures of the PDF in a PDF viewer, and I pasted together the screen captures in Adobe Photoshop. And I have a really old copy of Photoshop that has a one-time license, so I don't have to pay an annual fee like the new users of Photoshop have to pay software as a service. Well, not me. I have like decades-old edition of Photoshop that works just fine, and I was able to use that copy to paste together PDF pages. Now it's like one long contiguous image file. And you can download an image file consisting of that official letter by going to the link within the description for this broadcast. Right here, you can find that link for the Blog Talk Radio page for this episode. And if you want further analysis of the public investigative file regarding the investigation by the Department of Criminal Investigations regarding Deputy Mrjenovic and why they found him, or how they informed, rather, the information that they gave, spanning 248 pages of investigations, and that 248-page file was what St. Croix County District Attorney Michael Nyskies consulted in determining his two-page letter of exoneration. So you can see the whole chain of evidence, and you can follow the reasoning from on-the-ground investigators and the EMTs and all these other things, such as what happened to Jason's purple sweatshirt. Why isn't it in the coroner's office or the investigative locker with his light gray sweatpants? Well, you can find answers to that within the investigative file, or rather, WPR rebuttal analysis of that file. You can also find why the conversations amongst the EMTs were redacted. Well, that is mostly any redactions were done by a separate autonomous body known as the Office of Public Records, and that is just any type of statutory restriction on what can be reported to the public. Well, the Office of Public Records goes in and blacks out over any type of information that is supposed to be withheld according to what the Wisconsin Assembly and Wisconsin Senate have jointly determined to be in the public interest to remove from any public reports. So any medical information, such as what the EMTs did to try to revive Jason Pero, has been omitted. Any detailed information about how the deputies responded afterwards. I mean, that has a blow-by-blow account of what Barak Rodrinovich says he did in response to Jason advancing, namely retreating to the behind the squad car and shooting twice. As to why Barak not go into his vehicle again and just lock the doors, well, that's not really tapped into, but I would presume that's because just of his training is that you don't go back into the squad car and lock the doors until help arrives. Like, that just did not occur to him. And basically, the DA decided to not hold against him that he didn't just go back and lock himself in the squad car right away. His training essentially was to try to disarm the individual as soon as possible. And although he had pepper spray and a taser on his person, in the heat of the moment, he decided to use a firearm because, really, Jason was not within taser range until he was within stabbing range. And based on that, then he's, you know, Brock's just like, well, screw that. I'm just going to shoot him. And the DA sided with Brock and decided to just say, yeah, considering the circumstances, that's what most of our law enforcement personnel will have done. That's what we train them to do. Don't wait until there's a risk of getting stabbed and try to taser him. Just shoot him as soon as he's within the possibility of stabbing you, and that's more or less the conclusion. Okay, well, that's all for today. WPR Rebuttal signing off.